Hello, this is Growing Wild, sponsored by Infinity Foods on Radio Reverb. I'm Charlotte Pett, and on this month's show, we are on the plot, talking all things allotment. We have Emma from the Community Allotment Project Plot 22, Diane Appleyard from the National Allotment Society, and resident gardener Sophie Eliadis takes us on a tour of her plot. But first, we're going to have a song, and it can only be No Diggity by Blackstreet.
Shutting it down, good lord. Baby got them open all over town. Strictly bitch, you don't play around. Cover much grounds, got game by the town. Getting paid is a forte. Each and every day, true play away. I can't get her out of my mind. Wow. I think about the girl all the time. Wow, wow.
That was No Diggity by Blackstreet. I remember playing that. I think that was the first song that I ever played on this show. And I made some terrible joke about the no dig system. Okay, so this month's show is all about the allotment. And it's a subject very close to my heart. It's where my horticultural career began. I got a plot on a whim. And then it turned out that I actually completely adored it and just loved growing food. And then that led me to going off and doing that for my living. So on this show, I wanted to show you that it's actually quite easy to get, it's easier than you might think to get a plot and what you can achieve in your first year when you have one, a bit of history about allotments and how they came about, and then what some people go on to do with their allotments and expand them to further than just them growing vegetables for themselves. So first of all, we're going to hear from Sophie. Sophie is our resident gardener here on Growing Wild. She's been on a couple of times. And so I went out to visit her on her plot. It's her first year of having it. And we went for a little tour around. And this is us by her compost area.
So here we are. Let's walk past the compost area, as we call it, which is a big selection of compost bins that we built when we first got the plot, because we kind of cleared this front area. So compost area, then we get to the first... Well, I call it a shed, but it's not really a shed.
That's an Anderson shelter.
It is an Anderson shelter. It's beautiful, isn't it? Original.
That's a proper from the war.
Yeah, I think so. It's pretty much, I mean, it's got the handles on it and everything for, you know, loading it off the van. And inside, there's actually, there'll be a bit of an echo now. But inside, we've still got the original brackets for the bunk beds or the seats or whatever it was. And there's even a little sort of runner for like a, I guess, a sort of security, not security screen, like a little...
TV?
Yeah, a TV mount and a microwave. Yeah, no, just the, I guess, a little hanger thing for maybe like a bit of privacy if you're having a sleep while you're in here.
Oh, I see, to be able to draw a curtain across.
Yeah, I think that's what these little poles
were for. I
mean,
you'd have to have been quite small to have been able to have more than one person lying down
on
either side.
You know, better than being blown up, though, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, we might be grateful of this in a few months. It's got a really good quality sort of closing mechanism. We've put a big padlock on. And
what is security like here? It's often a bit of a thing on allotments. They get raided or, you know, my shed got pushed over and someone put an axe through the door.
Oh, that's so
sad. Times.
So far, so good. Nobody's had anything stolen or sort of vandalised while we've been here. We've been here for a year. And I think, as far as I know, there hasn't been much in the last few years. Yeah, so far I think we're quite safe. We do have quite a lot of fox raiders, though, but that's all right. We like them.
You're our resident gardener.
Oh yeah,
on Growing Wild.
Of course I am. Everyone should know me well.
I know.
Been on twice.
Had one question.
Woo!
Phoned in.
That was exciting.
There's no phone. That's right. Emailed. As a gardener, you still decided that you would like to take on a plot.
Yeah.
It's substantial. What's the size of it?
Big. I think it's a 16 rod. So it's a full size plot. I generally say it's a. Like a long driveway doubled. That's my way of explaining it.
It's a lot of land to manage.
Yeah.
And I think when you get a plot, you really realise how much work has to go into it.
Yeah.
But you don't need to be a gardener to take on a plot. And I guess that's what I want people to be able to see, is that, you know, you can take this on. It does. And the thing, the beauty of allotments is they don't have to be pristine.
No, absolutely. That it's kind of, it's a different thing. I think that's what's been interesting for me as a gardener, is that, you know, I'm used to working on presentation, on making things look really sort of pretty, and maybe sometimes not worrying so much about the stuff behind that, you know, the right at the back. We kind of, you know, okay, we don't need to worry too much about weeding behind a big bush because it's not going to be visible. So this taking on the allotment this year has been a good learning process, because I have that initial anxiety about, oh god, it doesn't look great, like it's a bit sort of rough around the edges and the grass needs cutting, and you know, there's weeds, even though they're really quite small weeds, I'm still a bit like, oh no.
But it's a different mentality.
It's a completely different. It's farming, really. It's micro farming. We took it on in October, which I think was really, really good time to take on an allotment. I would really encourage people to take them on in the winter, because
now,
they're
basically,
as we speak, because everything's slowing down. You know, yes, they're probably going to be in a right state, but you know, the ground is softer because it's raining more often. You aren't going to be competing with the amount of, you know, summer growth that you get from weeds and things. The grass is going to be slowing down. You can cut into a bed and make a shape that you like, and it's not going to suddenly be growing back as quickly, so you really can get on top of it. And that's what we did, was we just completely cleared the whole plot. We had lots of friends that came and helped out, and you know, you get a little camping stove and you get cups of tea and a big bonfire, and it's great. It's been really lovely, so you know, I've actually really enjoyed it. And then once we had it kind of under control, it's just been a joy, because you know, once you get one part of it under control, then you feel like you're winning, and then stuff goes in, it grows, you're amazed by how well it does, and then you know, it just goes from there, snowballs.
You've had it for a year.
Yeah.
What have you been able to grow and achieve in your first year?
Oh wow, we've had a really, really successful year. I don't know if it's because of the weather or because we've just been quite dedicated. I think we've had quite good feedback from our neighbours, our allotment neighbours, saying, you know, that we've done it, you know, we look like we've produced quite a lot. But what have we done? I'm just walking up. So we had salads, kale, we've had loads of beetroot, we've had rocket, we've had Cavolo Nero, we've had loads of interesting sort of pumpkins, we've had these little patty pan squashes which have been amazing, we've had radishes, we've had some slightly disappointing onions, but we're going to give them another go. We've had tons
always
of
tricky
potatoes. Yeah, they are, aren't
yeah,
they? I didn't realise.
They don't.
Yeah.
It's the size of them that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, they've been. I mean, they tasted amazing, but they were basically just, we just sort of stored the onion sets in the ground and then pulled them up again. It was a bit funny, really, but they were really lovely. We've had
it's a lot
tomatoes, we've had aubergines, I'm still going.
Yeah.
We've had five different kinds of bean, we've had raspberries, we've had sweet peas, we've got sprouts and cabbages. Yeah, we've had tons.
It's incredible. In year one.
Yeah, year
and,
one.
And that's just sort of being determined,
yeah, it's,
and
I mean,
doing putting the groundwork in,
yeah,
at this time of year. And
exactly,
then and setting yourself up for the next year.
Yeah, being organised, I think, you know, trying to think ahead a little bit, not masses, because I didn't know what we were doing really. But you can go online and there's so many nice sort of planners and little wall charts and things that just say like when to sow, when to plant, and when to eat. You know, that's just those three things are really helpful. Yeah, I mean,
And do you find the other people who have other plots are helpful as well? You know,
oh,
so if you turned up, you don't really have any experience, you're like, wow, I've just taken on quite a large space.
Yeah.
There are other people here,
yeah,
approachable and helpful.
So nice. And you know, we are two women and we're both quite small, and you know, I was worried at first that we might be sort of patronised, but you know, it's a predominantly there's a lot of men, I think, mainly on this allotment, and I was a bit worried about that, you know, that they're all mainly older retired white guys, and I was like, oh, you know, maybe they might be a bit patronising, or they might just not be that friendly, or they might be trying to help but actually end up doing things for us, which is a bit, you know, disempowering. But nothing like that has happened. Everyone has been incredibly supportive. We've been lent things, we've been shown how to do stuff, but in a really positive way. They've always said, just ask. So yeah, I literally could not have been happier with the community on the allotment is just incredible. And it actually, you know, I've always wanted to have a bigger garden where we could do this stuff, but now I don't really want that, because I want to stay here and do it with everyone else, because, you know, I'd miss everyone and I'd miss the community, and it would be a really lonely existence doing this at home.
Let's have a little stroll up here.
Okay, we're the Jerusalem artichokes. We have to fight our way past them. Okay.
What tools do you need to get started?
A good sharp spade. A spade, not a shovel. Good fork, a nice strong fork. Again, quite sharp, not too thick. To be honest, the best tools I've got, I got from car boot sales. I think the older the tools, the generally the stronger and better they are, as long as they're not damaged. You know, really, really nice, sharp forks and things like that you can pick up for a couple of quid in a car boot, because people are clearing out, you know, granddad's shed and getting rid of all the stuff. Yeah, so anyway, spade, fork, good trowel, good hand fork, just for weeding. You know, you won't be weeding straight away, but you'll be clearing first. And then a good soil rake, which is the flat, like a T-shaped rake with flat tines, not the sort of fan-shaped rake. I mean, they're useful as well, but to start off with, you'll probably be doing lots of digging, lots of turning over the soil, and then lots of raking it out into flat areas and getting rid of the stones and things like that. Lots of buckets, that's quite a useful thing to have.
So it's not a huge investment, you know, you can pick up these things, car boot sales, second hand, just looking for things to still be sharp. And the other side of that is things maybe not, but
things not to buy. Yes, I think it's very tempting, you know, people get, especially if you've got an allotment and you tell everyone you've got an allotment, and then people buy you a lot of garden centre vouchers for Christmas, which is really fantastic, and it's really helpful to get money towards things. But I know that in January a lot of people go to the garden centre with their vouchers, and they see all these like snazzy tools and things, you know,
labour saving,
exactly. Well, just know that there is no way you can save labour on an allotment. It's all labour. It's all about getting into it, digging, turning stuff over, getting tired, having a cup of tea, having a rest, getting back onto it. Just get basic standard things that people have been using for hundreds of years. That's all you need.
So what do we do now on the plot? It's autumn, the growing season is very much slowing down. What jobs are coming up now?
Well, for me, I mean, if you've already got a plot, I would say take advantage of everything slowing down, get on top of the weeds, cut new beds if you want to, you know, get rid of those pesky bits of grass that you meant to get rid of in the spring but you never got round to.
Where do you put your weeds? How do you deal with those? Do you compost or do you
burn? I just compost. I only burn blighty stuff, or, you know, bits of
Things that are diseased.
Yeah, things that are diseased. And actually we were a bit nervous about composting at first, but Dave next door said just throw it all in. As long as you keep piling stuff on top of it, it will eventually break down. Even, you know, he even composts bindweed, which is
wow.
I know.
Very
and
bold.
It works. He showed me. He's got all his out the other day to spread over things, and it looks fine. That's another thing. Turn your compost, have a look at it, see if there's anything ready to be used, because when you clear a plot, you can, you know, straight away plonk a bit of extra compost on there, because that helps suppress the weeds a bit.
So it's it's quite clearing, tidying.
Yeah.
And prepping for next year.
Exactly. And
you're trying to get through all the produce that you've grown.
Yes, exactly.
How do you manage that? Because this is a big site.
Yeah.
For two people, how have you coped with all the extra produce that you... Yeah, the quantity.
We've just got a second freezer. you do need to be quite clever about it. We had so many cucumbers that we were giving them away. And then our friends started getting a little bit bored of cucumbers. They were getting cucumber fatigue. Most people say, look, just stick a load out on your front path in a box and say free, and people will take them and they'll enjoy them. So there's always that option, which is quite a nice thing to do, to give them away. But
Will you manage it differently for next year? Will you sort of grow fewer of one variety?
Yes.
And just try and grow more different?
Yeah. That's exactly what the plan is, yeah. I mean, this year we just were like, what should we do? Let's get this bits and pieces. And we've tried to grow things that we knew would work. and that we could kind of rely on to be, you know, successful. But yeah, this year we're going to, well, next year we're going to go really experimental, and we're going to get a load of seeds from, you know, real heirloom varieties of things and try stuff out. I've been following a lot of people on Instagram, and I'm really inspired by some of their growing and some of their interesting things that they've been trying.
Like who?
Oh, I Dig Herbs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really great. She lives in Vancouver. But obviously we've got two greenhouses as well, so we're going to try and do some salads and some pak choy in the greenhouse. Should we go in here?
Lovely little tomatoes. Tomato? I'd love a tomato.
These ones are nice as well.
Mm.
They're good, aren't they? These ones are a waste of jelly time. The yellow plum tomatoes are absolutely boring as hell. Mm-hmm. They don't taste of anything. I love coming down here and just eating, like... Sometimes I come down here for lunch. And I'll just have, like, in the summer, I'd have like tomatoes, basil, salad, rocket, two cucumbers. They're amazing. Mm.
It's good radio, right? Having people stuffing their faces with tomatoes. Yeah, good. I thought so. I just think it's incredible how much he's achieved in just 1 year. And if you just set your mind to it, how much produce you can grow. And yeah, that list was quite lengthy, wasn't it, of all the different things that she'd grown. Some points that I thought were really good that she brought up and that might be concerns for folk who are thinking about getting a plot is potentially the outlay that you may think you may need on tools. But I mean, really, you can just get them from car boot sales. I've got an awful lot from car boot sales, as long as you make sure that they're still sharp and functional. Another point is the older generation. They can often be seen to be kind of dominated by the older folk who maybe might look down on you or might think that you're not doing enough, and their plots just look so pristine because they've got that much more time on their hands. But there, Sophie was really keen to emphasise how helpful they'd been, actually. And I have to say that's only ever been my experience as well. And then growing schedules, if you're not sure what you should be doing for the year ahead, then the internet is such an incredible resource for that. There's so much on there. And in fact, I'm going to put a couple of good ones on the show page, on the Growing Wild show page on RadioReverb.com. Just in case you're thinking about it and you want to have a little look, then I'll put a couple of handy schedules up there. So in honour of Sophie's Poor Onion show this year, I thought I'd play her The Onion Song by Marvin Gaye.
A great big onion, and hate and fear are the spices that make you cry. Oh, baby, and the only way to get free of this great big onion
is to plant love seeds until it.
That's Marvin Gaye and The Onion Song. And next we're going to have Diane Appleyard. She is from the National Allotments Association. I wanted to learn a little bit more about the history of the allotment. I realised I didn't really know how they came about or how long they've been around for. So I had a little chat with her and I asked her, what are the origins of the allotment?
Allotments originally, and they have been around in some form for hundreds of years, were a reaction to the enclosures where the common land that people, peasants, had grown food on began to be enclosed by the aristocracy, and people then were starving, and so allotments were provided for them. That escalated in the 19th century when demographics changed and people started moving around and gravitating towards cities. And then majority of the allotments today were created in the 20th century. There was a 1908 Act that created a lot of allotments. And then you will find that this year a lot of allotments are 100 years old because they were created during the First World War.
Ah.
There were millions of allotments then. That fell back when the war finished, but there still were allotments. They were very useful in the 1930s, in the Depression. Second World War, again, big boost in numbers, but then that reduced again after the war. There was a big loss of allotments because there was a lack of interest in the 60s. And then slowly, they've risen to, you know, prominence again, and people appreciate the importance of them.
Does more land get assigned for them as popularity increases, or is there a finite amount?
There are new allotments being created, but if you look at how sort of jam-packed our cities are and how short of land we are in the cities, there is a restriction there, because ultimately all the land will be built on.
Is there protection for allotments in that regard?
There is protection for a certain criteria of allotments, and they're known as statutory allotments, and they are the allotments that were created by councils in order to provide allotments. If a council wanted to build on it or move the people elsewhere, he would have to go through a process called Section 8.
Okay.
Where the Secretary of State would look at the situation. We would be consulted, we've got a role in that, and then there are criteria that the councils need to fulfil.
Have you seen a decline in allotment spaces for that reason, for development in more recent years?
Surprisingly, it's not as bad as you think.
Oh, good.
For the statutory ones, there have been some very high-profile cases that are unfortunate. The allotments that are in danger are mainly the private or temporary allotments. I can think of half a dozen private allotments, quite old ones as well, that are in danger at the moment.
Mm.
And we have, as a society, been working with some of the councils and developers who are building the new garden towns and villages, and encouraging them to include allotments within their plans.
Oh, that's great. Do you think that there is a relevance for them as much today as there were, say, 100 years ago?
Even more so in some ways, if you look at how removed we've become from food production.
Mm.
And, you know, and although now it is on the national curriculum, there is a generation who, you know, have never even grown some tomatoes in the backyard. I think it's important for that. And then they've got just so many other benefits. They're as important as, you know, going to the gym, going to the golf club, playing badminton. You know, they've got that role as well as producing food.
Yeah, it's known as the green gym.
Yeah.
Another thing is that perceived waiting lists can put people off. I think it's assumed that, oh, well, it'll just take me forever to get one, so I won't bother. How's that situation?
I think that there's two sides to waiting lists. Without waiting lists, allotments aren't viable because they're run on a shoestring by most councils. So once somebody goes off the allotment, you need someone to take that allotment up straight away and pay the rent.
Right.
And without a waiting list, you couldn't do that. I'd say to anybody who wants a plot, don't be put off by the waiting list. There is quite a high turnover on allotments, although, in some places, you have to wait for... There's a 40-year waiting list.
40 years?
In London, yes.
Goodness.
So you have to put, your toddler's name down.
Yeah, right. Have a kid, put the name down straight away. Often people's circumstances change as well when they've put their name down, say,
they do.
You know, when they were two.
Yeah.
By the time they are 42, their circumstances may well have changed. So, yeah, I know that they can be deceptive, waiting lists. Tell me a bit more about the association, the National Allotments Association. How did that come about, and how long have you been around?
It's been around in some form or other since the early 20th century.
Oh, right.
Numerous names, and I think we've gone back to a name we've had some time in the past. We're a cooperative managed by representatives from 11 regions in England and Wales, and we sort of cover Scotland, although there is we've got a Scottish sort of equivalent. We have about 115,000 members who join mainly through their allotment association. Individual members, council members, landlord members, and we support them with legal advice, with a seed scheme from King's Seeds. We've got an insurance scheme, because if a lot of associations manage their own sites on behalf of the council, and in that case you need public liability insurance, employer's insurance if you've got volunteers doing jobs.
And I spotted you've also got a sort of an advice section on the website to help people out with what to be doing at any point in the season.
There's a general one on the outside of the website, and then there's more sort of specialised advice for members. Yeah,
it's great. It's nice to know that there's this just body that seems to be looking after us a little bit and overseeing everybody on their allotments. That's a nice, it's a nice feeling. Isn't the patron the Prince of Wales? Is that right?
He is, yes.
Have you met him?
I've not met him, no.
I quite like the thought of him, you know, growing a few sprouts in Balmoral or somewhere.
Yes, I think he's very supportive of food growing and wants children to learn about food particularly, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's so important for us to remember to teach and to know the sources of our food and to be able to grow our own. I don't know, I just think it's kind of a vital part, and it's such a community-driven thing as well, isn't it? A lot of people have plots that they have opened out for groups to come and learn on, and you know they've got a wider scope than just one person growing veg for themselves.
There are some.
One thing that I'm always a bit puzzled about is how they're measured. What's the rods all about? Why is it measured in rods?
It's just a very old way of doing it. Rods and poles, and a full size plot. The standard that we'd like to keep is 10 rods, which is 250 square metres or 300 square yards.
Oh, wow. But it's substantial size.
It is, yeah. Not many of that size anymore. I've got half a plot, and for somebody who's working, that's probably enough. Although people do manage more. Some people have more than one allotment and seem to cope, but I'd struggle.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Say if you had a half a plot, how many hours a week do you need to put into maintaining that?
In the summer, I try to get up two evenings and at least half a day at the weekend, which is quite a commitment.
Mm. That's a reason that some fall by the wayside as well? Is that where people get them? They think, oh, this will be lovely, the kind of romantic notion, and then actually the work that has to go into it is a bit of an awakener.
It's quite hard work, and it can be full of disappointment. But it's also got, you know, so many pleasures and a sense of achievement that it's worth it.
Yeah, have you had a successful year this year?
I've had a difficult year this year because I've had other calls on my time. I've kept it under control.
There's always next year.
That's
the beauty. Next year's going to be the year.
Yeah. I work from home, so I don't see people all day. So going up to the plot after work is fantastic because I get to see people, get to have a chat. And I think it is, they're important in that way.
That was Diane Appleyard from the National Allotments Association. She raised so many interesting points there. I think the waiting list thing especially, that can be such a point where people get put off thinking that they're years long and there's no point. But actually, that may well be the case, but if you put your name down because people's circumstances change, then you can get one within a few months. In fact, that happened to Sophie, who we heard from earlier in the show. She got hers within 2 months, despite there seemingly being a waiting list of several years. So it is worth trying if you are thinking about it. And the other theme I think that just comes up repeatedly is community and how important that is and how it's almost as important as the growing itself. It's the people and the shared experience that we have up on the plots. And we're going to hear from one person who's taken that to a much further extreme on her allotment plot, Emma from Plot 22. But first we'll have a song. This is Pass the Peas by the JBs.
Hey Bobby, why do you like soul food? Thank you.
That was Past the Peas by the JBs. I've got to confess to nicking half of these songs from a playlist I found online that Guardian readers had composed all around songs to do with growing and vegetables. Otherwise, I don't think I'd have heard of that ever, but I rather like it. So yeah, the JBs. Now we're going to hear from Emma Holdsworth. She is somebody who got an allotment and saw more potential within that than just growing vegetables for herself. And since she got the plot in 2010, has transformed the space into a project where a diverse range of groups can go and learn about growing and cooking and in a safe environment. So this is her telling us more about how it all started.
So I was gardening here with a friend of mine for a couple of years, and I knew I wanted to be outside more myself, and I really loved being here. And it was stepping through the gates of the whole site. Just, you feel like you've stepped out of something and into a different sort of space. So I found that quite soothing at the time. And for years and years and years, I'd wanted to combine some kind of working on the land with a therapeutic aim for people. I thought that that would be something I'd really want to do. But I didn't know how, and I didn't know where. And then it dawned on me that if I was to keep this place on, then maybe this could be the place, this could be the land, because allotment rents are affordable, and it was low risk. I just recently qualified in as a therapist, and I'd got a background in working with people who were experiencing homelessness. And so all of those threads came together, and it began. And that was in 2010. And then later on, we got our second site. And then recently, we've been able to join them together. And so that means that we've got a decent amount of space to grow vegetables, to have a fruit garden, herb garden, and a social space to enjoy cooking and eating it and hanging out together.
Let's have a little walk through. And we go through this little tunnel. What is that? Is that willow?
It's hazel. It's a mixture of silver birch, hazel. Yeah, lots of hazel and other bits and bobs from around the space. But mostly bindweed holding it together now, I think.
Shh, no one can see that.
It's changed over the years a little bit, depending on kind of capacity and funding. And at the moment, we've got a regular women's session every Thursday, and that they're like the main caretakers of the space, and many of those women have been coming for several years. And then we have a monthly dementia inclusive gardening session for people living with dementia and their carers. We've got a grow and play session in the wings. It's several years we ran a group for parents and preschool children, and that's kind of coming back now, happily funded by the Co-op supermarket. What else? And we've got a Friends of Plot 22 project. So that's been crowdfunded, and everyone who's contributed to that crowdfund can come along and bring guests. And there's always other ideas in the mix. I mean, there's so much that we could do. We had, for many years, we had a drop-in. I guess that was the sort of what started me going, was a weekly drop-in for adults, and a lot of people who attended that. I really wanted to provide an outdoor space where people who were experiencing a lot of mental distress could come. So that was great fun. We had a lot of people came and really made a difference to the space.
What do you see happening to the people that come here? Who, because a lot of those groups that you've described sound like they come from some distress or some trauma. And do you see a noticeable difference from them having spent time here, you know, or, you know, what's the benefit that you gauge from that?
I think everyone says how much more relaxed they feel almost as soon as they arrive, and they use words like haven, oasis, peaceful. So I think it has that really profound effect on how they feel. And everyone says they feel better when they leave.
Yeah, so even if it's just for that moment, they're just to get that even half an hour of just some peace amidst something out when you step back out through the bindweed pergola. But maybe it comes back again. It just provides some respite.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think just being amongst the elements, being among a living environment that, and with very little demands on you. I mean, it can be really tough for people to get here. That's quite a big step. Just getting here, committing to come, but I think once you do, the rewards are so great that that's what makes people want to come back again and again, and a lot of people do come very regularly for a long period of time. And I think that's also a really key thing, is getting to know people over time. So as well as getting to know the land space over time and having being able to watch things grow that you've planted and then maybe even harvest and eat them, I think it's about connecting with other people slowly over time as well, and that's how relationships are made. It's over time.
That's something that comes up over and over again, actually, with allotments. It's often not just what you grow, it's the community that is grown around it, and it's a common aim and goal that you've all got, and mentality, actually, towards growing your own food and what that brings you.
And I think, you know, a lot, having a garden or even a small garden can sometimes feel a bit overwhelming on your own, because nature doesn't stop. It doesn't say, oh, she's just having a bad day, I won't grow. It, you know, it just keeps going. And so I think, you know, and allotments are big spaces. So it's great. I certainly enjoy sharing the doing here. And I find I'm a bit more motivated to do the work when I'm in company. It feels kind of, I don't know, it seems like we energize each other to do the work, and it's just more fun.
So we've got strawberries.
Currants, behind you raspberries, and then we're going to walk through an archway of cherry trees. We garden organically here, so we don't use any chemicals, and there's a certain amount of understanding you have to have that you're going to lose quite some of your harvest to the nature.
Yes. I think just accepting that brings peace, doesn't it? As soon as you think, okay, I can, you know, 50-50 usually, if not 70-30 to them. But
and we've had to come up with sort of strategies to around that. Like we grow lots of things in pots before we put them in the ground to give them a bit more of a chance against the slugs. And we often put our pots high up on tables or shelves so that the slugs have to climb a bit higher to reach them. And just things like that. And those kind of strategies have worked quite well. Very influenced by permaculture principles. And I really liked the simplicity of their earth care, people care, fair share, because it really encapsulates that the wholeness of what we're trying to do here. So that's been a kind of touchstone to go back to all the time, and the idea of not fighting nature but being in harmony with it and considering all the factors, you know, sharing the space with the living creatures and trying to work with nature rather than against it. Definitely.
Did you think, when I'll get an allotment plot, did you ever imagine that it would become, you know, your life?
No. It feels a privilege to have had this opportunity to do it. It's not always been easy, but I'd rather be doing this than sitting in an office. I believe in it.
So, yeah. Well, that's what makes it work, isn't it? Because you're the heart of it, and it's your vision and your passion, and that's why it's been such a success.
I think what I've really realised and what I've really enjoyed about it, because I is helping other people realize their ambitions and their dreams through it. So if people come along and they get to know the space and they garden and they've got a wish themselves to work with other people outdoors, then if we can make that happen through this space, then that's just brilliant. And that's been such a privilege to be part of those journeys as well.
One thing I really notice is how it encompasses all ages. You're talking about nippers, and then you've got the other end of the spectrum with dementia gardening.
Yes.
And that's the beauty of gardening, isn't it? And growing, it's for everybody.
Absolutely. And it reflects every kind of challenge in life, I think. You can find the kind of equivalent in the garden, and I think that's maybe that's another therapeutic benefit of gardening, is that, you know, new things are always germinating and other things are dying, and it's that process is happening all the time, and there's things to harvest and fruits to enjoy, and then there's tidying up to do and clearing. So it reflects all of that we have to do in our own lives as well, and I think that's the universalness of it. Yeah.
And letting the art of compromise.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
What does being on the plot do for you, bring up for you?
I think for me it's got all the elements of a home space, in the sense, but in a way that you're very connected, very close to nature, very close to the living land, but lots of creature comforts as well. So there's that sense of home from home, in the sense that we've got a really comfortable wooden cabin with a wood-burning stove in, and it's better equipped than my kitchen at home. and a long trestle table that we can have communal meals around, as well as the fire circle. And just that sense of... I suppose it's a bit of a fantasy, really. It's like a sort of going camping, but not having to leave the city. You can walk here. So it's a camping experience without having to pack your sleeping bag and drive for a long way.
It's that beauty of having a space like this in a city, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't know. You can't see anything grey anywhere. I mean, we're really lucky today. We've got beautiful blue skies. And then it's just framed by trees all around the edges. I can barely see there's some houses behind. But
yeah, and you wouldn't believe you're probably only 500 yards from the old Shoreham Road.
Incredible. Mm. And that's what I love about allotments, is that that's what it does. It just takes you out of urban living and plumps you straight into nature connection.
Yeah, I think that's why they're so, so important in cities. And it's so important that they are as close to and, you know, overlapping with urban areas as they possibly can, because they're like our sort of stress valve. And, you know, especially in places like Brighton, where so many people are living in flats or conversions, that they don't have their own outdoor space. I think it becomes even more essential then.
That was Emma Holdsworth from Plot 22. You can find out more about her on her website, which is just plot22.org. I will put that on the Growing Wild show page as well. She does so many great things. There's so many groups there, ranging from all the ages, from toddlers right up to older people who, you know, she's got those dementia inclusive sessions as well. So do go and have a look if you're interested. If you're kind of in a position where maybe taking on an allotment plot isn't ideal for you at this stage in your life, then going along and volunteering at some of these community plots can bring you so much value and give you a slice of allotment life, but in a much more manageable way. So people are always looking for help. I talk about them a lot, the Brighton & Hove Food Partnership. If you're local to Brighton, they've got a list of all of the community gardens that are looking for volunteers, and they'll match you up with an appropriate garden that suits your needs. If you're outside of Brighton and are keen, then these projects run all over the place. Just have a look around, get on the internet, and people are always looking for help. I just love what she did with that plot. She got it for herself with her friend, and she's grown it into this just amazing project. And I have a lot of respect for her and for what she does up there. And she has lovely produce, lovely amount of kale. Let's have a song, and it's going to be Octopus's Garden by the Beatles. I can't do a show about allotments without playing it.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been, in his octopus's garden in the shade.
Oh, Ringo. That was Octopus's Garden by the Beatles. Okay, we're coming to the end of the show. So if there's anything that you've heard and that you're keen to follow up, then do go to radioreverb.com and check out the Growing Wild show page. I'll put everything that's come up today on there, lots of links and lots of information that can help you. I'm feeling quite inspired after hearing all these people up on their plots, so I think I might have to take a visit to mine and get cracking. It's that classic thing of being a gardener, that my allotment looks terrible. Don't know if I should admit that, really, but it is true. Points to bear in mind are: don't be put off by waiting lists. You don't need a huge investment at the beginning. You can buy so many things from car boot sales. There's so much help and information out there, and you don't have to do these things alone. Get your friends up there. I remember when I got my plot, I had a shed party and roped loads of people in to come and help me build my shed, and cooked them this sort of shoulder of lamb over a fire as a treat afterwards, and it was just so much fun. They're very inclusive and community-driven, so if there's an inkling in you that thinks you might want one, then have a look. Why not? They're great fun. You can get in touch with me via Instagram and Twitter. I am on at growingwildfm on those two. You can email, which is growingwildreverb@gmail.com. And, of course, via the show page on radioreverb.com. Thank you for listening. I'll be back again next month. Until then, go well and put your name down for a plot. I'm going to play you out with Potato Head Blues by Louis Armstrong. See you next time.